Podcast One production.
Welcome to part two of my chat with sexologist Dr. Nikki Goldstein. Now, if you haven't heard part one, you might like to go back and listen to our pretty intimate chat. In this episode, Dr. Nikki answers some of the questions you've all sent me via social media. We talk about being slut-shamed in your 50s, blowjobs, and having good sex with a bad back, asking for a friend. Okay, let's talk about sex, part two. Here's Dr. Nikki. Welcome back, Nikki. I love chatting sex with you. People tell you that all the time.
Yes. You should get me after a few drinks, and it kind of sometimes really goes down the gutter.
Well, this is part two of our sex chat. The first part was sort of general questions that I had based on talking to my group of friends who are out there and dating. But in this podcast, I want to specifically focus on questions that I have received from our listeners via email and on Instagram. And thank you so much to everyone who reached out. I did put the call out to ask for sex and intimacy questions. I'll get to as many as I can today. Starting with this one, a message from a lady on Instagram who said, going from having sex with the same person for 35 years and never really enjoying it to now dating and having some amazing sex with some nice men, how do I not feel guilty? Who would have thought you could feel slut-shamed in your 50s? I'm trying to get around the disapproving looks and comments from friends. Is this a thing for women re-entering the dating scene?
I think this 100% is a thing because it's a thing for women in general. It doesn't matter what age you are. You could be having sex with one person and you're still slut-shamed. It's that easy. I really think it comes down to your own beliefs about sex, sexuality, female sexuality, because of what you're taking on. You know, for some people, they still even doubt themselves as to if what they're doing is okay. Now, if you've been having sex with the same person for 35 years, you step out there, you're having great sex, multiple people, I get that you're going to be feeling a bit guilty about that. Does that mean that you devalue your relationship? Why is one different to the other? There's a whole reasons why, including resentment, which we don't speak enough about, and its impact on sex and long-term relationships. But let's go back to the dating scene now. I really think that this particular person needs to get more in touch with how they feel about what they're doing. Because if you are okay with what you're doing, then it should not matter what anybody else says. It's like water off a duck's back. I get slut shamed more times than you could ever imagine just because of what I do for a living. I'm called all sorts of names because I talk about sex. Now, I know what I do and I know what I'm doing and I know why I'm doing it. So you could be sitting here right now and be giving me funny looks and slide comments and I wouldn't take it on board. You've got a choice as to how much of your sex life you tell to others. Yeah. If somebody is judging you, don't tell that person. You know, they might be a great friend, but maybe they're not the right person to be discussing your personal life with because they're not respecting you by being judgy. Everybody has a different life. They have a right to a different life, and we shouldn't judge somebody because of that. So I would say, A, stop telling this one particular person what's going on with your sex life if they're giving you shame, or maybe it's a group of people. But also, you do need to check in with yourself about how this is impacting you. You might need to do some work around your own thoughts about what you're doing sexually. It's not necessarily about changing your behaviors. It's a matter of being at ease with what you're doing, because if you were really at ease, those comments wouldn't get to you like they are. So it's a few things in that one.
It is a weird time to be single though, and particularly with the divorce rate higher than ever before. And
I think it's a great time to be single.
It is. I think so too. But for, you know, for someone who has been in a long-term relationship for a long time and suddenly finding themselves on the dating scene again, I think also at this age, we are more confident sexually and happy to ask for what we want and not ashamed to go out and get it. So it is sad that there are still some people in society that judge a woman for exploring her sexuality and having a good time.
There's a lot. I mean, we see it in media all the time. As soon as a woman is sexy, even if it's just the way that she looks, God forbid, we all jump on that bandwagon of she's too sexy and she's slutty and she's easy. I've heard people use words like dirty recently, and I'm thinking, oh my God, are we still living in that age where a woman who is overtly sexual is referred to as dirty.
Now, I know you were on the last season of The Bachelor and you did the chemistry testing.
Not as a contestant.
Great. No, exactly. As a sexual and chemistry expert. But, you know, there was a lot of focus on Abby. She was 23 years old and she was very confident about her sexuality. And she, you know, was always looking really sexy. And she openly said, I'm horny and I want to have sex with this guy, which, you know, is a natural thing to think when you're dating someone.
And but he was very good looking.
God forbid, she said it on national television and everyone straight away said the girl was a slut. Yeah. It's disgusting.
And that's what I'm referring to with the words dirty, is that those words were being used in regards to Abby, and I was mortified because I did get the opportunity to get to know her and she was the sexy girl, but she owned it.
I guess what's different for my audience, Nikki, is, you know, it's this woman's been shamed on national television for being open about being horny and wanting to have sex with a hot guy she's dating. These women are being judged for being, you know, oh, she's a mother. She's got children. How could she be having a one-night stand? Why is she on Tinder picking up a guy and having sex with him?
But this goes down to how we see women and their sexuality when they start to age. Why is it that a mother has to be a nun? Mm-hmm. It's a Madonna whore complex. You know, up to a certain point, you're the fun whore, then you procreate and have children, and all of a sudden you're the Madonna and you're worshipped, but you lose your sexuality. And it is so important for women, for their sense of self-worth, to keep their sexuality and to keep in touch with it, because why should it ever be taken away from you? I think as you age, it's even better, because I think what I knew about my body when I was in my 20s, even when I was studying sexology,
exactly,
you know, and what I know now in my 30s, it's just such an amazing thing and what I'm about to experience, because I'm in touch with myself. I know what I want. I know how to communicate that. And that's what a lot of women know. Even though their experience of being in this hookup culture might not be great, they may be exiting these long-term relationships. Those relationships might have had some really shitty sex, let's face it. But at least as women, they start to be a lot more in tune with their body. And that's what they need to tap into.
Yeah.
Don't be so fearful of the fact that you're not up to scratch with what lube and what condom and what sex toy and what new trend word there is going on. It's about going, okay, I know my body, and it's about how I experience that with somebody else. I think it's great when you are older, because it's like going back to what you got in your 20s, which was the hookup culture for everybody, and an older stage where you know yourself more.
And you know your body. And
yeah.
I know you're the sexologist here and we're asking you for the advice, but I'm going to say to that lovely lady who emailed me, the same thing I said to my girlfriend is, who gives a fuck what anyone else says?
Exactly.
So long as you're being safe, enjoy it. So, Nikki, let's say you are coming out of like a 30-year marriage, and let's face it, a lot of people don't have a lot of sex, if any, towards the end of a marriage. How do you then find yourself and express your sexuality comfortably as a woman?
Well, I think it's one of those things that you've just got to get out there and start doing it. You're not going to know what the right steps are. You're not going to know what you like. It's not a matter of ticking off a bucket list, but maybe you've got an idea and you think, oh, I've always thought about that. I've always wanted to try that. Now, if in that exploration you find yourself feeling guilty, judging yourself for enjoying that or wanting that, the biggest thing is to ask yourself why. I feel like a parent when I say this to people, but you know, when it comes to challenging these backward views that we have, the best way we do is to ask ourselves why it is there. If you go and explore something, let's just say that you've always wanted to try what a one-night stand would be like. You've been married for 30 years, you get back out there and you think, ooh, I watched all my single girlfriends do this and I missed out. You go and do it and the feelings the next morning are shame and guilt. You then need to ask yourself, why? Where did that come from? Because often when we start to depict it and go, hang on, did that come from my upbringing? Was it someone in my religion? Was it my parents that said good girls don't do that?
Sex ed at school. Yeah.
Then we start to go, well, does that even make sense anymore? You know, it's the power of asking why is that belief there that actually frees us from that. And it's the same thing if you're being judged externally from other people and it kind of nicks you a bit. You know, even the most confident people can be affected by that. You've got to go back to yourself and say, why does that hurt? Why does that comment sting? Is it because I maybe still just a fraction inside think the same?
Yeah, I guess it's a view on sex as whether it's a natural thing that you can do and enjoy and get pleasure from, particularly as a woman, or whether it's something you're kind of forced to do in a marriage or to have children.
But we've all been brought up with backwards beliefs around human sexuality, especially as women. And that's the difficult thing as we become adults and we become adults that are exploring our sexuality. We have these in our head. And is it about exploring what we really want? But also it's about challenging these notions that we were brought up with so we can let go. You know, even look at the concept of having an orgasm. For so many women, a lot of it's to do with their belief system and they go having sex or they're masturbating and they have all these thoughts that come up in their head, and then having those thoughts stops the connection from the brain to the vagina, and it's this stress and anxiety that actually stops them from having an orgasm. It's a lot of the time to do with your beliefs around your own sexuality.
Okay, a question from an anonymous man on email. I'm in my late 40s and I've recently noticed some sexual positions just aren't as comfortable as they used to be. A simple session in the sack and my body feels like I've run a marathon. Can you recommend any really effective sexual positions that still feel great but aren't as physically taxing on the body? I hear you, anonymous. I'm very keen for your answers on this one, Nikki.
I have a hip injury, right? So, you know, it's interesting that I think we have this myth that acrobatic sex is better sex.
You think everyone else is swinging from the chandeliers, right?
Exactly, or it's the Kama Sutra. Now, I'm going to go back to a porn story to answer this one. I was always fascinated what the difference was between the sex that couples in porn have on screen and what they have at home. Now, on screen, we see these crazy acrobatic, complex, you know, legs, backs in all sorts of positions. And even a porn star will admit to you the impact it has on their body. So I said, okay, well, what do you do at home? And this one couple said to me, well, pretty much what we do at home is missionary. And if you were to be filming the type of sex that we had, you'd probably think it was boring. So it comes down to this myth that we're supposed to have acrobatic, complex sex in order for it to be good. Now, without knowing more about what particular body parts, like I've got a hip injury, is it a back injury? Is it a knee injury? You know, is there something in particular in that person's body that is stopping them from getting in a certain position, or a certain position feels uncomfortable? So you need to be creative, but you also need to challenge yourself about this acrobatic sex crap. You know, it might look like a really simple, plain, boring position like missionary, but yet you could be hitting the right spots and with the right person, you're feeling that intimacy, you're feeling that connection, you've got skin on skin contact. What's wrong with it looking like boring sex, but actually feeling really great? There's also all sorts of different sexual furniture that you can get. I've actually had once before, it's like a wedge, it's called the Jazz. So if you have a bit of a bad back, it's really good to put underneath your back to support it. It can also help you to change sexual positions.
Can men and women use that? Yeah. Under their back?
Yep. There's all sorts of different shapes that you can use to support various parts of your body. So on one hand, you can help them to support positions. So some positions are made more comfortable with these different shapes. But I also think for people that have a sensitivity somewhere or they need a bit of support, they can also be used for that as well. So again, this is one of those things that there are solutions out there.
Do you have to go to a sex shop to find these the apparatus,
you
or you
come
can buy
to my
it
shop
online?
And find the apparatus.
Have you got your own sex shop?
Yeah.
Online?
Just launched, yes.
Oh, what is it?
So,
Shout
Dr. Nikki Shop.
Oh, and so are there like harnesses and things?
There's two particular ones that I'm stocking, but the one I was talking about is the Jazz. So, it's a wedge, and that's what's really good to support the lower back, because I do think, even especially for women during penetration, there's a lot of force that's taken on the body. It doesn't matter how young or old you are, that force can be complicated and can feel uncomfortable. So the more that you can support your body so it feels comfortable, the better. Now, something as simple as putting a wedge underneath your back, or even if you're on your front and you put it below your pelvis just to support it and give it a natural tilt, helps a lot when it comes to penetration sex in different positions so that you're not straining a part of your body.
A question about oral sex from a woman on Instagram. This is a long question, so stick with me. She's 45. She got married for the first time this year after only one other long-term relationship. She says her ex wasn't big on oral sex, but the new hubby would love it to be a regular thing. In 5 years, she's done it twice, once after their wedding, once on their honeymoon. She's wondering if other women actually enjoy giving blowjobs, because she doesn't think she does and she feels like she's prudish by not enjoying it, even though she knows he loves it. She says she doesn't feel forced into doing it, but My husband is such a beautiful man that I really want to do it for him, so I'm trying to change my mindset. She says she knows at least one girlfriend who loves giving a BJ. So she asks, am I abnormal?
I don't think she's abnormal. I know a lot of women who actually don't like it. It's not to be that we just like every sexual act that's on the repertoire. You know, it doesn't mean that we're all supposed to like oral sex, even penetration. I know gay men that don't like anal sex and people go, how does that happen? I'm like, well, it's a possibility. So I would really love to know, what is it in particular that she doesn't like? Is it a thought or a belief? Is it a matter of a size issue? You know, if somebody is a bit bigger or if you have a smaller mouth or you have quite a tight jaw, it can be something that's uncomfortable. So we need to also just assume that maybe it is something to do with a bit of both, bit of column A and bit of column B. Now, there are actually things that you can do to help you during oral sex where you don't have to feel, how do I put this in a nice way? You don't have to take the whole thing in your mouth. Let's just call it a spade.
Well, we're not beating around the bush at any stage in these chats. Nikki, why start now?
Now, you know, there are products like, there's one specifically called the Manta by Fun Factory, and they're calling this the Guy Braider. So it looks like a manta. It's got its, I'm going to say, claws. You can put it down the base of the penis. It does vibrate. It can also be used as a stroker. So it might be a matter of giving oral sex to the tip of the penis, but using something like that at the base. So he gets the sensation that it is up and down the shaft. But if it is a matter of her feeling really uncomfortable, then something logistically that makes it easier for her. There's another product, and I'm not only into things that numb things, because I feel like you should feel when something's painful because your body way of saying stop. But I have taken on these throat sprays because I did test them out and they taste really nice, that you can spray in the back of your throat and it just relaxes it. So if you have a gag reflex, it helps to solve the gag reflex. Now, what I really love is she's saying, you know, he's a beautiful man. I really want to do this, because if you were maybe listening to this and you didn't hear that part of the conversation, you'd think I was really anti-feminist by saying women need to numb their throats to take a penis. But it's one of those things that it's really lovely to pleasure somebody that you love. If this is something that they like, it's not about forcing yourself to do it, but the belief system mentally is really about, is this something I want to give to them because they like it and I want to do something if I can. Making sure, though, that you're physically not putting yourself in a position where you feel uncomfortable, looking at these different options of using something else at the base, maybe using a throat spray. And it might not be something that happens every time, but it might be something that they do every so often. And it's kind of like that treat, you know, like, I hate to say it's his birthday, Christmas, whatever. Or it's something that you're having a cheeky weekend away and you're really getting into it. And you think, you know what? I really want to do something nice for him, but exploring why it is that you don't like doing it in the first place.
And I think you really hit the nail on the head there, for want of a better phrase, because, you know, sex is about pleasuring yourself and the other person. It's kind of, you know, I get as much mental pleasure knowing he's having a good time as having my own good time. It's funny, the blowjob chat. I have it with girlfriends all the time, and some of my girlfriends love it. Like, they're mad for it. And then some are like, oh, I hate it, but I do it maybe just because I feel like I have to.
And I think a lot of it's mentally, though, as well, of like how you were brought up to perceive that act. Because for some women, they were like, oh, no, that's not something that you do. Or they were told, or they were, it was spoken about in front of them in a really degrading way, that it was only something that slutty girls do. So therefore, for them, it really triggers something inside of them, of even in a relationship, am I being that dirty, slutty girl because I'm giving a blowjob? I'm your partner, I'm your wife, I'm the mother of your children. So I should be sexually worshipped and not be down there. For a lot of women, they love the power that they feel with it, because a phallus is seen as a very powerful symbol, and especially when a penis is erect. You know, this is a symbol of a man's power. So feeling like they are dominating that during oral sex, sometimes there's excitement for women. They feel that they're in control of that symbol of power. So a lot of it does come down to our belief system around a blowjob.
I'm going to go off track a little bit here, because this is all about questions from listeners. I didn't receive this question from a man, but I'm sure there's a few out there that would like to ask it. What about the reverse of that for a man who doesn't love going down on a woman but would like to do it to please her?
Well, I think it's the same thing as looking at why. And this kind of gets back into the pubic hair debate as well. There are some guys that don't like doing it because there is pubic hair down there, and maybe you can make a compromise. Maybe it's about not having a Brazilian, but trimming things back. It might actually have something to do with his own belief systems about oral sex. Maybe he had a bad experience. It could also be a smell issue. And this is one of those awkward conversations to have.
Who can ever have this conversation comfortably?
It's, you know, and the thing is a vulva is a very complex organ in the body. I have learnt this over years, is that there's even thrush these days, they're saying that thrush isn't thrush and it's maybe a reactive skin condition and it's our body's defense. Like, there is so much that can happen down there, and bacteria and all of that. A smell can happen, right? It's not the end of a world for a woman, but the awkward position that a guy might be in is that, say that there is a smell that's going on down there, it's putting him off from oral sex, and he's faced with that whole thing of, how the hell do I have this conversation? Now, it could be something like bacterial vaginosis. It could be thrush. It could be a change in their pH balance. But if it is stopping him from doing something and she's maybe still requesting oral sex, then it is one of those awkward conversations that has to be done. Not in a fact of, hey, you smell down there, what's going on? But more about, you know what, one of the reasons why I'm not enjoying it, and you flag and go, I don't want to offend you, and please know this is going to be an awkward conversation, but I want to talk to you about it because I really enjoy having oral sex with you and I don't want this to come in your way. Let's work it out together. If you have the support of somebody to say, let's have a look. Is it a soap that you're using? Is it something in your diet? Is it... It's not an easy conversation to have when dating.
Nikki,
it's better a relationship side of things, because you've got to remember that if you're just dating somebody, this might not be an ongoing issue. If you're in a relationship, this might be the ongoing issue where then you've got to have that conversation. And again, it's the intimacy, it's the vulnerability. If you can have a conversation about the smells that come out of a vagina, then you know what, you're doing pretty well.
I just think, I can't imagine any man comfortably having that conversation or any woman receiving that conversation, no matter how politely he brings
it
up.
I've had it, but I'm a different breed of human. There's not much that would embarrass me when it comes to talking about sex. But
yeah, you're in a different league, okay?
I do it for a living, so then in my own personal life it's like, yeah, I can do it, you know, and I forget that for other people what feels natural for me feels very awkward and uncomfortable.
Okay, sex on a first date. This was an email from A. She's 53 out of a 12-year relationship. She feels very naive about sex stuff. She says, thanks for discussing the topics we all want to know but are too shy to ask. Would you consider having a conversation about when to sleep with a man, whether to have the conversation and how to have the conversation? The conversation being about having feelings, ready to have sex, but happy for more than just a couple of orgasms.
Okay, I think sometimes you can talk about things too much. If we're talking about sex on the first date, right, we need to have a little bit of ponder about where we want this dating scenario to go. So let's just say we weren't talking about having more than a few orgasms. If you have sex on the first date, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if you're acting on your desire, if you feel safe, if you feel like this is going to be a good experience, but you can't necessarily expect that it's going to be something more than that, because sometimes you can set a precedent by saying, hey, I'm in for a hookup. And they think, oh, were we just doing this to hook up? Were we doing this for a future relationship? And let's face it, there are still guys out there that think if you have sex with them on the first date that you're easy. It's not to say that you shouldn't do it, but it's also you need to understand that there are certain risks involved. Now, if you really like someone and you're thinking, I want a relationship, I don't just want a bit of fun, but I'm also feeling really sexual, I really feel like I want to do something with this person. If you're worried about that scenario, then flag it and say, you know what, you might be hooking up on the couch, things might be going from one thing to the other. You might have to stop and say, you know, I've got to clarify with you that this is not just what I want, and I'm happy to go through with this, but I just need to make that clear because I'm worried about being too sexual and getting hurt. Flag it with that person. I would even go one step back and say, well, if what you're after is more than just a few orgasms, have you communicated that in general?
Mm-hmm.
If you've been on an app, have you actually said, and I actually think it's necessary these days to say it, not just date by what app you're on. You know, are you Tinder versus eHarmony?
Be very clear if you're looking for a relationship or a casual hookup. It's as straightforward as that, really, isn't it?
And it's not just one of those things that just because you're on Tinder, you're just there for a bit of fun. A lot of relationships have happened for Tinder. I think that Tinder's only kind of more recently been seen as a hookup app. Now we have this emergence of other apps. So, yeah, it needs to be in a profile as to what you're looking for. Are you looking for fun and open to other things, which is like, let's hook up and maybe it goes somewhere? Or if you're only looking for something more, say that. Now, it's no guarantee that the other person has properly read your profile. They might just be looking at your photo and going, oh, yeah, she's hot, let's go on a date. So you've got to accept that that might be a scenario. But if you are feeling a little awkward, then say that. It doesn't have to be a conversation of, okay, so when should we first have sex? Now, how do you feel and how do I feel? If you're worried about being hurt emotionally during sex, then I would flag that with that other person so they know. Still not a guarantee though. And this is the thing, like just in like in life, you know, shit can happen and it can happen with sex. And we have to be somewhat resilient to that negative side of things, that we know how to pick ourselves up, that even if we have gone out there, we've had the sex, we thought we were going to be safe, the guy hasn't called or he's ghosted or he's done something, you'll be okay. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't get back out there and do the exact same thing.
And then what you need to do is listen to our rejection episode with Rachel Boise. That's a
really
helpful
bad at
one.
Rejection, aren't
I
we?
Still can't believe there is this theory out there and this myth that, you know, I hear people still saying it, oh, you just shouldn't sleep with a guy until you've been on at least 5 dates. Why is that mentality still going?
It's a game-playing mentality. And listen, there is some merit to it, because what you're doing is by saying, I'm not just in this for a good time, but I have many friends. I have one in particular that got married to a guy she had a one-night stand with. It's not to say that it doesn't happen. I think that there are risks when you have sex with somebody on the first date that they might perceive that you're just in for a good time. They might be a backwards-minded guy that thinks, well, you do this with everyone. And those are guys you don't want to have sex with anyway, because they have negative views of female sexuality. But I also like the idea of something to look forward to. I think that sex these days is more than just the physical. It's the mental as well. You might have that mental connection with somebody straight up, or it might be one of those things that when you're dating that it's nice to get to know somebody and feel comfortable with them and have that connection and establish some intimacy so the sex that you do have is enjoyable. Because for so many people, I think we have sex too quickly. It's like it's something that we do. It's like sex has become a form of dating. If the sexual chemistry is there, then we'll go out for dinner. So sometimes it is nice to say, okay, I'm going to get to know this person, develop a connection, but you should never say, it's going to be 5 dates. Do it when you feel like you want to do it, regardless of whether that's the first night or it is 5 dates.
This is a question from a man on Instagram. Life threw cancer at me, and while I'm in remission, I'm wondering if you could talk about people with disability and sex. He says he's got a colostomy bag, which he thinks is a turnoff. He said they also removed my prostate and nerves to my penis, so no erection. I'm still interested in some form of sex, but the mind games are baffling. He asks if his only answer is to use sex workers, which he hasn't tried yet.
See, I'm newly fascinated into the world of sex and disability, because I hear so often people saying to me who are able-bodied, oh, we're just too tired, we're just not in the mood, my partner's not turning me on, all these list of things. And then you meet somebody that has a physical disability. And I've met a lot of people, one in particular recently in a wheelchair, who's talking to you about their obstacles of having sex. And you think, hang on a second, we're talking about some more logistical issues. There is always a way around it. You know, I met a gentleman who is a gay man in a wheelchair with an able-bodied boyfriend, and he said to me, what am I going to do with another guy in a wheelchair? You know, people think it's so weird that I was out there dating guys that were able-bodied, but I can't lift someone else up. You know, it was quite this interesting conversation, and we were talking about it in a very frank manner. I don't think that your only option is for sex workers, because what woman would not take a beautiful man regardless of what he had going on? You know, you want to be treated in a certain way. You want somebody that you respect. You want someone that you can look up to. If somebody has certain obstacles to stereotypically what we see as sex, that's okay. There's always a way around it. You know, I've got friends that have got colostomy bags. They still have sex. Yes, they are in relationships and they've been in those relationships before something had happened. but I don't feel like we should be seeing people with disabilities as unsexy or unsexual. Now, a sex worker might be able to help in the interim to be able to explore what to do, what can happen. You know, the prostates are a very complex one when they start to do surgery. Again, I can't comment to that. It has to be more of a medical conversation as to what was done and what was left. There are pumps and all sorts of things that can help. There are implants. So there is things to work out, but why not, if you're concerned, reach out to a sex worker to explore what you can do and how to be creative in your sexual functioning so that when you're dating, you can have that conversation with someone around, okay, well, I know how this works.
And I think it's a really interesting point, Nikki, because he says in his wording, is my only answer to you sex workers.
No.
Like, that's a bad thing. But yeah. I think it would be a great option for him.
Well, this is it. A sex worker could be a great teacher.
Yes.
A sex worker is a great way, especially if somebody has not been feeling sexy, to feel touched again, to feel sexual pleasure. I'm all for sex work done in the right way. And I think this is a great example. There are some organisations that do work with people with disabilities to connect them with sex workers that are not like your stereotypical, you know, gigolo or, mm-hmm. or sex worker. They're more of people that they might have backgrounds in social work or psychology or counselling or work with therapists to kind of bridge gaps. And even with things like trauma, you know, there are people that use sex surrogates that work in conjunction with a therapist to help somebody getting used to touch again after going through some form of trauma. So that would be, I think, more of the angle for a sex worker, not just anybody that you find online, but finding somebody that has experience in this, because they might be able to be the teacher to this guy to work out, okay, here's how things work. Here's what we can do. And even role play. What would this be like if I was doing this in the dating world and just met someone new and had to tell them what was going on down there? You know, you think about some of the horrible things that people have been through in dating and relationships. If this person has a lot to give, why wouldn't somebody find him sexually attractive regardless of what's going on?
Okay, this question comes from a man who says, I've lost my mojo. I haven't had sex in a long time. Is this something that happens as you get older? Do I have to work at getting my libido back, or is it just taking a little holiday and will it come back naturally?
Okay, so the problem is with men and aging is that they get this decline of testosterone around the 40 mark. So, you know, biologically, the problem is that sometimes our bodies, same thing with women post-menopause, sometimes our bodies work against us on a hormonal level. Doesn't mean that our minds still don't want sex. So again, there are lots of different options available out there. There are different injections. There are different hormone replacement therapies, testosterone creams I've even heard of. There's so much out there to be looking at how you can biologically feel like you're sexual again. So in terms of mojo, you know, it'd be really interesting to know, is this just a matter of not desiring sex, or is there more going on? How does he feel about himself? How is his relationship? You know, if your relationship is really struggling and you're facing all sorts of issues, resentment, anger, who wants to have sex under those circumstances? Is your partner pulling you down? You know, sex is not just about the physical act of sex. When it comes to getting your mojo back, it's multifaceted. You know, even let's have a look at health in this particular, you know, situation. If you're feeling unfit, then I assure you that it is affecting your sex life.
See, and this is so interesting. This question resonated with me because this is something, you know, that I have been going through because I've been really unwell for a long time. I got a really bad virus and I've been sick for months. And I kind of feel the same. Like, I haven't been dating, I haven't been meeting anyone, and I couldn't care less. And now that's starting to bother me because I'm thinking, oh my God, is my libido gone? You know, I've still got girlfriends that are like desperately dating because they just want to meet a guy and have sex. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm too emotionally exhausted and physically exhausted to think about
that's
it.
That's the words that you've just said, emotionally and physical exhaustion.
But I think, is there something wrong with me? Like, why don't I want to have sex as badly as my other single girlfriends do?
I don't think that it's a competition as to who wants to have sex more. If you have gone through a period of bad health, I have an autoimmune disease that I struggle with all the time. When I'm sick, I don't want anyone touching me. And you know what? I can't even put one foot in front of the other, let alone try and work out the complexities of a relationship. So it's okay to take a bit of a break and work on yourself. But I think for women, we tend to function very well on our own, and we can shut down a side of our sexuality. It doesn't mean that it's not there, and it doesn't mean that we are not as sexual as men. But I do think after a certain point, we're like, okay, we can live like this. We live very fulfilled lives. We're very good at getting our fulfillment from other people. You know, that intimacy, that connection, even touch. We hug. Men don't always hug. You think about how many times you would touch your girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, you're physically getting touch and connection with people all the time. So a lot of the needs get fulfilled when we switch off our sexuality. Don't beat yourself up because you're saying, well, I feel I should be out there. I should be wanting it. Sometimes it's a matter of putting yourself out there and seeing how you feel when you're out there. You might be out there and go, you know what, this doesn't feel right, and I have to explore why that doesn't feel right. Or maybe reminding yourself of, actually, this feels really nice to be sexually desired, and it feels really nice to be touched. Sometimes it's literally a matter of putting yourself in an uncomfortable, potentially uncomfortable position to work out what role that's playing in your life.
So then I ask you on behalf of the man who sent in that question and myself, is it natural to lose your libido at
yes.
some stages?
Doesn't matter what
doesn't
age you are.
Doesn't mean there's something wrong with you.
No, it okay. doesn't. It doesn't matter what age you are. You know, we talk about sex drive a lot in this medical sense, like losing libido. But really, we haven't factored in life. When you're stressed, when you're tired, when you're going through a health battle, when you're having a bad run, when you hate your partner, when you've been jaded in the dating game, these are all things that have the capabilities to stop us in our tracks from having sex and wanting to connect with another human. So there is a medical side to things. There is, you know, as we age, we can look at hormones, we can look at physical capabilities when it comes to sex, sexual pleasure, sexual boredom. But there's also these life factors that I think we don't consider enough. And if we did start to consider them, maybe we could rationalize some of these periods. And instead of saying, I'm losing my mojo, it's just a matter of, you know what? Life's a bit stressful and hectic at the moment. And that's okay. I don't really feel like sex, but I'm working on it and I'm getting my life libido back. And when I get that energy back and when I get my mind back, I'm throwing myself out there. I think sometimes we jump on the bandwagon of the worst case scenario that if we're not desiring and wanting sex all the time, the next argument I would throw in there is that even realistic? Are we supposed to be having sex and mind-blowing sex all the time? We are a very sexualized society and we have a lot of pressure on us to be having mind-blowing sex 365 days of the year. It's not realistic, not for everyone. So that in itself is an unrealistic expectation that makes us feel even more shit about ourselves when we are going through times of ill health or stress or not wanting to connect with another human.
So basically the key is just run your own race. Do what feels good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just look who's running next to you though.
Oh yeah. I love talking sex with you so much. I hope we get to do it again. If you want to hear more sex with Nikki, you've got your own podcast.
I do. Sex and Life, where we get to explore some very interesting concepts and topics, and nothing is off limits.
Nothing was off limits here either. I'm just going to let you know.
Oh,
I'm not the prudy podcast.
Definitely nothing off limits.
And that's here with Podcast One.
Yes.
Now also this sex shop that you mentioned, your website, let's give that a plug.
So because that's drnikkishop.com.au.
Dr. Nikki, N-I-K-K-I.
Shop.
Shop.com.au. I'm so excited for you. As I said, love it. Congratulations. And let's talk sex again soon, please.
Would love it.
Romantically Challenged was presented by me, Sammy Lucas, in collaboration with Podcast One Australia. Sound production was by Matt Nikolich and the executive producer is Jenny Goggin. For more episodes, go to podcastone.com.au, download the Podcast One app, or look me up on iTunes.